Welcome to Civil Discourse. This podcast will use government documents to illuminate the workings of the American government and offer context around the effects of government agencies in your everyday life. And now your hosts, Nia Rogers, Public Affairs Librarian, and Dr. John Augenbaugh, Political Science Professor.
Hey, Augie.
Good morning, Nia. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm good. And as usual, listeners, you need to know this. I've had a half a pot of coffee, so I'm well caffeinated.
So we're good to go. Excellent, because I have decided what I want to be now.
What do you want to be?
I want to be the head of an agency, and I'm actually going to be discerning and say, you know, I want to be the head of a space agency, as we all know.
The Space Force. Oh, yes.
And the reason that I want to do that is because then I can make unfettered space regulations. I will be in charge of all the regulations. I was just, to give a little context, I was moving the Code of Federal Regulations the other day. I was moving some volumes around. Yes, it's something we do in libraries occasionally. We squoosh things to make room for other things.
Yes. And I was
squooshing them up, and I was thinking, you know, if I was in charge of an agency, I would just have carte blanche to write regulations, stick them in here, as we have noted in previous episodes, wait out the time that I have to pretend to care whether other people agree or not, and then go forward. It's the ultimate power, right? Like president, you get voted out, Congress, you get voted out. But dude, if you're the head of an agency, I just regulate the snot out of space and nobody can stop me.
There are a couple problems with your thinking, Nia. Okay.
Well, one, I've announced it, so that might be problematic. I'm going to have to kill you and all the listeners. But other than that.
Okay. Beyond the potential that you might have to engage in mass murder. Okay. So let's move beyond that.
Okay. Next.
It's a big subject. It's a big topic. It's a big problem, but there are a couple comparatively minor issues you might have to address.
Okay.
One, as we previously have discussed, rules for the rulemakers. You might have to at least go through a particular process listed in the Administrative Procedures Act when you are issuing all of these directives. Okay, so right. That's one problem, right? But a second problem, okay, actually arises because of a little-known law passed in 1996, Nia. You know what that law is?
I do not. Do I have to care about this?
Perhaps you should.
Okay. So my future plans may be affected by this law.
Yes. Okay. Substantively, probably not. But again, like so much of politics, it's a pain. Okay. It's a pain, right?
Oh, is it one of those sneaky trip you up things when you're not looking?
Yes, kind of, sort of. Yes. Okay. Yeah. In the name of the law, Nia, is the Congressional Review Act, which was passed in 1996. Okay. This was part of one of the laws that was passed by the Contract with America Republicans when they...
Mr. Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich, okay, who was a member of the House of Representatives from the fine state of Georgia, and he was Speaker of the House. He and President Clinton were each other's foils for, you know, roughly, you know, the entire time Bill Clinton was president. Okay.
Right. They were nemesis.
Yes.
Nemesi. Right? I don't know what the plural of nemesis is.
I wondered what the plural. We'll have to look that up, right?
Yeah. Nemese, maybe? A-E on the end? Anyway.
You know, because, you know, it's kind of sort of like, what's the plural of focus? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Foci.
It's foci, right? But then I've actually been corrected at academic conferences for not necessarily using it correctly.
Don't take this wrong, but academics need to bite me sometimes because, dude, sometimes we get down into the weeds of things that don't matter. In the long course of history, does it really matter whether I say foci or focuses? What do you care? But anyway, okay.
So Congressional Review Act.
Right.
Okay?
What does it do?
Okay. So I'm just going to refer to the acronym because, again, in
we
government.
We love an acronym.
We deal with government documents, folks, and we like our acronyms.
We do. We do. They give us comfort.
Yes. Okay.
They're like a warm blankie.
Yes. Okay. You know,
you can wrap yourself in loving acronyms.
Yeah. It's like waking up on a cold morning. Okay. In my case, I go out to the kitchen. Okay. I brew my first cup of coffee. I sit in the recliner. I pull a blanket down. Okay. And I, you know, lovingly hold that first mug of coffee, right? Acronyms are that, okay, for those in government, right?
That's right.
Okay. They just warm me.
They are the sustenance.
Yes. They warm me to the essence of my soul.
Except for this, the ones that are more brutal, ice, right? Right, which sounds like what it is. You would be afraid of that.
Yeah, you would be afraid of it.
But FEMA sounds so nice, right? Like, oh, FEMA.
But even with ice, if you say it correctly, you can have some fun with it. Ice.
Well, that's true. If you that's true.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So your Congressional Review Act. What are we going to call that?
CRA. The CRA. Yes.
Okay.
So CRA. CRA. Okay. CRA has two requirements. Okay. First, all rules promulgated by executive branch agencies have to be reported to the United States Congress. So yeah,
I have to. My Space Force rules have to be told to Congress.
Yes.
No. I counter with no, because all they're going to do is be obstinate and difficult.
Oh, the reporting requirement is the least offensive part of this for you.
Well, I guess if I just had to tell them and I didn't have to care what they thought.
Ah. But here's the rub.
Is that the second part of the rule?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the rub. You know, as Shakespeare would say, okay, man, we're just
good when we can get a Shakespeare reference.
Man, we're just like all over the map, right? Okay. The second part is Congress then has 60 legislative working days. Okay.
Wait. Yeah. Legislative working days defined as when they are actually
in session.
Okay, because their legislative schedule, that could be the better part of a lifetime, 60 legislative working days. Have you looked at their schedule?
Yes, I am familiar with Congress's working schedule, right?
Yeah, talk about lackadaisical. If I worked as least often as they worked, my boss would fire me because she would never know who I was.
Okay. Listeners, what Nia is referencing is something that I discuss with my students with some regularity. Of the three branches of the federal government, probably the, I can't believe I'm saying this, the laziest is the Supreme Court. Okay. Because let's be very clear. Their work really doesn't start in earnest until like the last week of September. They don't hear oral arguments until the first Monday of October. And then they have breaks throughout their term, okay, so that they can write, okay.
And read.
Let's be very clear. Many of the justices then fly around the country and give talks.
Right. And farm the actual work of the Supreme Court out to their clerks.
Clerks, right? But then the clerks, as we've discussed previously, they tend to get a little cranky if their term doesn't wrap up by the last week of June. Because the first week of July, they're on vacation. You know, they have their summer furlough. And many of them have cushy, teaching gigs at law schools around the world, a nice little university
trip to Barcelona,
yeah, right,
nice, lovely summer in I was going to say Ukraine, but not right now.
Oh, ouch. Ah, throwing some serious shade.
Sorry. But your 60-day legislative working day is not 60 calendar days. That is not 2 months, and I'm free.
Because Congress
They show up for 60 days.
Yeah, because Congress will adjourn for holidays. They will adjourn, they adjourn quite a bit during the summertime.
Augie, okay. They adjourn for molecules moving in the air. They adjourn when they want to screw the president or when they want to get back at somebody, they'll adjourn, right? Like, I mean, they just adjourn at the drop of a hat. Okay. So what you're telling me is this could go on forever.
Well, 60 days with, the calendar year is 2 months. For Congress, it could be four and a half months.
Ugh.
Okay. Now.
So if I get to the end of that, does my rule stand?
Okay. Well, here's the deal. The CRA basically says that within 60 days, Congress can introduce a special joint resolution of disapproval of the rule.
Oh.
Yes.
But they can't stop me. They just disapprove.
No. Okay. It's a special joint resolution. Now, if they pass the resolution, then it goes to the president. Now, more than likely, what's the president going to do to their disapproval resolution?
Well, if he's in their party, he might okay it. But if he's not in their party, he's unlikely to okay it just on principle of, if you don't like it, I probably do like it, and therefore go away.
Yeah, he's going to veto, the president's going to veto it, right? Okay.
Okay.
I mean, think about this.
Because I was hired by the president. I'm probably in cahoots with the president.
Yeah, because
cahoots is a strong word.
No, I mean, because
I am probably in agreement with the president in terms of political aspirations or things I want to do with the regular
policy. Right. I mean, because again, that's why we still have patronage for those positions.
So they get to register disapproval, and then the president gets to say, "Up, don't care, but junk."
Yeah,
and that's
pretty,
the. But it slows me down.
Yes, it. Yeah.
That's the point. Oh, yes. Okay. So the point of it is not to stop me. The point of it is to annoy me and slow me down under the theory that it might scare me into changing
the regulation,
or it might just slow track it so much that by the time it gets around to it, it doesn't take effect or it doesn't do.
Yeah, because if we're expecting the executive branch of the federal government, okay, to, respond quickly, the CRA slows down the executive branch.
Okay.
And this was designed to be a tool of congressional oversight of the executive branch, because this really reflected conservatives being concerned that the executive branch was largely operating without any control.
And that Al Gore was rewriting the federal government in large documents that he would thump down on people's desks.
Oh, yeah.
Called Reinventing the Government. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the National Performance Review. Right.
Right.
But,
So they were afraid those young bucks would come in there and
start making
all kinds of crazy changes. And Newt Gingrich was like, what we could do? We could slow this train down.
Yes. Right.
We can't stop it, but we can slow it down enough to aggravate people that maybe they'll just go away or stop trying.
And, when Clinton signed it into law, you have to believe that Clinton's thinking was, okay, the United States Congress hardly ever achieves consensus on anything. You think that they would be able to achieve consensus to go ahead and overturn some sort of arcane rule that is issued by little agency like the Space Force, right? Okay.
Mine will not be a little agency. We will take over many other agencies. Look out, other agencies. I'm coming for you.
And Nia, your statements is why we have another concept in the study of bureaucracies known as turf wars, right? You know,
I am very sure that DHS will fight back, but Space Force is cooler and more exciting.
Excuse me. It's not only the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, okay, which has sunk trillions of federal taxpayer dollars, okay, into, you know, the Star Wars defense system, okay, and satellites.
They shall be mine. They shall be mine. I would look great in a uniform. I could get one of those uniform, like pretend uniforms that like the all the dictators in history have made, you know, Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin. And then I could just put ribbons all over it of all different colors and kinds. And when people say what they're for, I say they're what I say they're for, because that's what dictators get to do.
Let's just put it this way. The Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, their badges will have nothing on your uniforms.
Oh my gosh. My uniform will be, and I will have epaulets with like braidy things that hang off. It will be fabulous. It's going to be totally fabulous.
When you are walking down the street, you and your agents.
Oh, like okay? I'll ever walk.
Okay. Okay. But as you are walking to.
I will be carried on one of those. You know, those things like the ancient Egyptians, like the, I can't remember what they're called. A bier, but you know, where you're carried along. And
while in this conversation is veered wildly away from the CRA.
Yeah, I'll have to pick the right kind of president to get this and get that going. But anyway, so back to the CRA. So it slows it down. But it can't actually technically stop something.
Yes, it could.
Okay, it can. How?
Okay. So remember the second step or the second major part of this law. Let's say Congress passes a joint resolution of disapproval.
Right.
And let's say the president signs it.
Oh.
Then that rule, okay, cannot go into effect. And moreover, Nia, the agency is prohibited from crafting a similar rule.
I was going to say a get-around rule.
In the future, okay?
Oh, like ever?
Yes.
Okay. Oh.
Okay.
So if Congress were able to back the president into a corner where they felt like he or she felt like they had to sign it.
Yes.
They could kill it. Do you think that Gingrich, when he brought this up with Congress and got it passed and sent it to Clinton's desk, do you think Clinton felt in some ways backed into a corner because they were so oppositional?
I really think
it would make him look bad if he didn't sign it, if he didn't say, you're right, Congress should have.
I think the Clinton administration... Listeners, you got to recall the Democratic Party in the 1990s, led by Bill Clinton, was much more moderate than the Democratic Party is today.
That's a fair point.
Bill Clinton was labeled a new Democrat. Okay. Bill Clinton once infamously said, the era of big government is over. Can you imagine AOC, for instance, saying the era of big government is over?
Under no circumstance.
Elizabeth
Warren. She could be on a rack being tortured by the Spanish Inquisition.
I mean,
no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, and she would never.
Could you imagine Elizabeth Warren saying that? Nancy Pelosi saying that? Bernie Sanders? No, they would never say that, right?
No, the progressives in the Democratic Party would not.
Yeah, they wouldn't go for that, right? They wouldn't go for that. So it was a different Democratic Party. And as you mentioned, Nia, you know, this was the presidential administration that had the Vice President, Al Gore, do a landmark study, the National Performance Review, that went ahead and said that the executive branch needed to be more entrepreneurial. Okay. Well, you know, less red tape, encouraged to take risk. So, you know, this is part and parcel of a series of reform efforts that scholars, Many folks, for instance, in business schools were arguing if we wanted to get a more efficient, effective, economical government, we needed to make changes.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think the Clinton administration thought it was backed into a corner. What I really do think the Clinton administration thought was the likelihood that the Congress would be able to pass a special joint resolution agreeing to disapprove of rules. And let's face it.
Okay.
You know, Nia,
so y'all go ahead and have your law, because the likelihood of you being able to implement it is non-existent.
And to that point, because I know you like to ask this question. Okay, as of November 12th of last year.
Okay, you're going to answer the question.
Question.
I love it without me even asking, which is, how many times has this even been a thing?
So we're talking about November 12th of 2021. So how many years is that? 25, 26 years?
Right.
Okay, about 25 years. Okay, only 20 regulations have been overturned. Only 20. Okay.
In 25 years, they're averaging less than one a year.
One a year, right? And by the way,
is that because they just can't agree to?
Well, I mean, because again, you actually pointed out one of the flaws of the CRA. What if Congress is controlled by the same political party as the president? What's the likelihood? What's the likelihood, for instance, that the Democrats, which control both houses of Congress, at least until November of this year, November of 2022, both houses of Congress are going to overturn a regulation issued by some agency in the Biden administration?
Wildly unlikely,
right?
The only way they would do that is if they didn't think it went far enough.
Far enough. That's right.
Right. Okay. That's the only.
Yeah. Right?
The only time you would overturn in your own administration would be y'all didn't go far enough. We want it to be 10 times bigger, badder, wilder, crazier than it was.
And what you've actually seen is the first time it was used when Bush 43 just took office. And when he came into office, the Republicans regained control of both houses of Congress, and they overturned a Clinton administration a regulation about ergonomics in the workplace. The Department of OSHA.
I'm sorry. I'm not saying that that's not important, because ergonomics in the workplace is important. Okay. It's important that your desk is at the right height, your chair is at the right height, you don't get carpal tunnel. All of that is important. But really,
that's the thing. That was the first time.
That's the hill.
Yeah. That was the first one they had to take. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the Clinton administration had OSHA. Okay. Which is part of the Department of Labor. OSHA had passed this new regulation and the business community hated it, right? And they got nowhere with OSHA. OSHA just did notice and comment rulemaking, informal rulemaking. They did it at the tail end of the Clinton administration. Bush 43 comes into office, Republicans regain control, and they went ahead and said, okay, fine, done. Okay, we're overturning this, right? The next 19 came.
19?
Yes. 19 of them occurred. Okay. During the Trump administration, wanting to overturn regulations issued by the Obama administration. Yep.
Wow.
Yes. But again, that's what happens when you
get oppositional party.
Yeah, right. You get a set of elections. Okay.
Although did he have the entire Congress at any point? No.
No,
he didn't have the House. Okay.
No, he didn't have the House. Yep.
He had the Senate for the first.
Yes.
No, he had the Senate for the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But he didn't have the House.
Yes.
I see. So that's interesting. You see, that's a.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would you expect that after November and the potential slash likely shellacking that the Biden administration will take, that there may, we may see another uptick in CRA stuff? Because.
Yeah.
There that will is, be oppositional Congress to the president?
Yeah, that is, if that's the focus of the Republican Party, right? Okay, because again, that's the other thing you got to take into account with the CRA. You know, what are the priorities? What's the agenda?
Oh, how much fighting do I want to do about these regulations?
I mean, because let's face it, Nia, how many Americans get really, really excited about hearing that the Congress wants to overturn regulations, many of which, most of which, most
don't
Americans
apply.
Most
right.
Americans have never even heard of.
And
right?
don't apply to most Americans, because the way regulations work, for those who are not familiar with the regulatory process, is they are by agency, and so they're within a limited scope anyway.
Yes.
Because there is no agency that has all the power. Now, when I fix that and change it with the Space Force, that will be different. And the laws that I pluck, or the regulations that I pluck and change, will affect everyone. But yes. Until then, generally speaking, even really big regulations don't affect everyone. They're because of the way agencies are broken out and the way interests and public interests are broken out.
Yeah.
They don't usually cover, like if they make a housing regulation, it's probably geared towards a specific group within the United States and their housing. It's unlikely to be all housing everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, if you're talking about the Department of Housing and Urban Development, right? You know, housing and urban development has a number of housing programs. So when they issue a regulation, it might just be for one of their housing programs.
Exactly.
Right?
Which may affect 3 or 4 million people, but 3 or 4 million people in the 336 million of us is a drop in the bucket. It doesn't affect, it affects deeply those lives and does not affect anyone else. Like,
that's right. Yeah. Right. I mean, so, you know,
so they're deep, but they're not wide.
You know,
most
when
of
they,
the time.
Yeah. When, you know, the Small Business Administration, which is an agency within the Commerce Department, changes a loan program. It's a loan program that has deep, you know, deep significance, great importance to small business owners. But for most Americans who don't have their own small business,
right,
would you even know of it?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Unless a friend mentioned it to you,
it wouldn't be a thing. It doesn't impact your life,
right? Doesn't stick in your brain.
Yeah, right. And let's face it, most of these regulations, and we talked about it when we did the podcast episode on rules for the rulemakers, most regulations don't get reported on by the mainstream press. And unless you're a geek like me, who will occasionally just, you know, go online and look at the Federal Register because I like doing that. Okay.
Right. Or you get wind of
something
in your area, like
your policy
something you're
area.
Interested. Right. You're interested and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Let me go check and see what that says.
Yes. Right. You know, you work for an interest group. Your boss comes in and says, I need you to scan the Federal Register for the last couple months to make sure that these agencies aren't trying to do something devious
right.
or that will hurt our members, right? There you might find it. But again, that's because the interest group has a particular policy focus that benefits their members.
Yeah, but unless it's totally sexy and salacious, it's not going to make the news.
Oh my goodness, no, right?
It's just...
The federal government is so big and does so much stuff.
Right.
And they break it down, Neil, like you described it, okay, into, you know, this department does this, and within departments are agencies. So it gets even more siloed, right?
Right.
More, you know, narrower as you go deeper down, okay?
Exactly. That small business loan that Augie's talking about affects bakeries with less than 10 employees. It becomes this tiny thing because that's how you make rules.
You know, a hairdresser that wants to open up a second store.
Right.
Okay. You know,
right. Second location. Exactly.
Okay. You know, a person that owns an auto repair shop. Okay, and sees a great opportunity to expand in a different part of town.
Or we're going to change the definition of stream to be this number of acre feet of water per month instead of this number of acre feet, and it changes by 0.001%. So it's going to affect 200 streams in the entire nation.
Yes.
Right. Okay. That's the kind of level we're talking about. And your average person does not care.
Yes.
So, and the media doesn't care, because if you came out breathlessly and said, oh, they're affecting 200 streams in the United States, the media would say, okay. And that's the end of that. Like, they wouldn't. Because yeah. One, it's not going to get eyeballs. And two, it's not going to get clicks. And three, it's not going to sell anything.
Yeah, right.
So there's, you know.
And this was one of the alleged advantages of the CRA, because much like the media, like the public,
it can surface things.
Many members of Congress are generalists.
Right.
Okay. They have some specific policy issues that they pay attention to because it benefits their constituents. But by and large, they're generalists. Right. That's the reason why they delegate a whole bunch of legislative authority to the executive branch, because the executive branch is populated by subject matter experts.
Right.
So how do you make sure that Congress is actually aware of what the bureaucracy is doing?
So some poor clerk's job.
Yes.
In the office of either the majority leader in the Senate or the majority leader in the House, their job is to look at the CFR when it comes out every day and see if anything will set people on fire. And if it does, they need to bring it up to their boss and say, this might be a thing we need to be worried about.
You can even get more specific. I've had former students.
Oh, no, they have to be informed. So somebody sends them an email saying, hey, we're putting in this regulation.
I've had former students that go to work for members of Congress, Nia, and I've asked them what they've done. Okay, they're like first couple months on the job. And I've had easily a half a dozen of them say, I've had to wade through the CRA. And they're shocked that I know what the CRA is. And I'm just like, oh, you're talking about the reporting of rules from agencies. And they're like, one, why do you know that? And two, it is so boring.
And the answer to question one is because you're a policy wonk and you're an administrative law goob.
Yeah.
So,
but the second question is,
but yeah, it's boring because it's boring because the actual running of government is boring.
So
it's
much
boring. Yes. It's paperwork. It's sign this thing and move it to the next desk. And you know what I mean? Like I've heard that on film sets that they spend 98% of the time sitting around waiting to do 2% acting. Right.
Yep.
Like, and so that's why you get all kinds of crazy stuff that happens on sets, is because people are bored. So they pick up guns and shoot them, right? And accidentally kill people. Or they,
you know, they
or there are affairs. Or there are,
you know, they develop,
they get into drug problems.
Yeah. Yep.
All kinds of stuff. And then some of them do more benign things. I know that some people do needlepoint. And they're like, this is the pillow I made during Star Wars or whatever, right? Which is good for you. But the boredom factor is so high with the federal government. But wait, getting to a point there, though, that's interesting that you bring up that one of the advantages of this, of the CRA, is that it does surface regulations to people who might not otherwise be exposed to them. If you had to remember to go read the CFR every day, Federal Register. Sorry, I keep saying the CFR, but it's the Federal Register. I'm sorry. If you had to go read the Federal Register every day, you wouldn't. Not a thing most people would do every day. You might, and I might, but normal people would not do that.
Yes.
But being forced to know what's going on, that's a really good advantage to that, is to help surface things that maybe people are sneaking around and doing, like, oh, I don't know, consolidating agencies behind your back. So you're telling me I'm going to have to be more devious than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean,
note to self,
you could probably still get away with what you proposed at the beginning of this podcast episode, Nia.
If I have both houses of Congress, if I have both sides of Congress and the president.
But if nothing else, it's going to force you, okay?
To announce it,
okay? Whatever. And then, you know, in wait for that other branch of government to, you know, work 60 days and hopefully, like, nobody gets upset, okay? And proposes a joint resolution.
Okay. That makes that seem like it's more difficult than I had expected.
Yes. And again, so much of government, and I don't say this to dissuade any listener who's thinking about going to work in government, but as Nia just pointed out, a lot of what the government does is not terribly exciting stuff.
It's boring, right? Management. And it's megalomaniac management.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it really does manage people like me who want to take over everything. Like, yeah, okay, you can do that, but it's going to take you 6 months and you have to get past a joint resolution first.
Yeah, I mean, it's like so many things. I mean, when you become an adult, okay.
You have to take your car for inspection. And you have to do all the, you just have to do those things because that's the society in which we live.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know,
got to pay your taxes.
Listeners, Nia's heard me share a tale of woe of something I'm going through right now as we are recording this podcast episode. You know, I have a house, right?
And have a plumber in your house this morning.
I have a plumber in my house this morning, right?
Because that's the kind of stuff you have to do when you're a homeowner.
Yeah, right. And when I was a kid, okay, and there were a couple of periods, okay, without going into too many details, where I was homeless, right? Okay, where I was just like, man, I would really like to have my own home. And now I do. And now I'm just kind of sort of like, wow. You know, that seemed so much more appealing
when I didn't have to do all the stuff that I have to do.
Right. Okay.
Right. When I didn't have to power wash the roof every year.
Right. Okay. Where, you know, I have to, like, you know, create a flow chart to figure out when various parts of my house will need to be replaced. Right.
And save accordingly.
Yes. Right. But again, you do that because you like your house, right?
Need the shelter. You need you need it to perform.
Yes.
In the way a house performs, right? If you just don't replace a window, if it gets broken while you're playing baseball with Mac, you throw it through the window, because you're like that. You smash the window and you don't replace it, right? Eventually, the integrity of your house will fail.
Yes. And then the overall
animals will come in, winter will come in, you know.
And likewise, when you go to work in the executive branch of the federal government,
you
got to maintain the thing. There are forms you got to fill out. There are people who you need to tell because you don't operate in a vacuum.
Right.
Okay. You know, it's like, you know, the old, you know, the bureaucratic lament. I would be so much more effective in my job without politics. You work in government.
Right. Okay? What did you expect?
What did you expect? Right. And part of working in the democratic government in the United States is the legislative branch every once in a while wants to know, okay, what the executive branch is doing. Okay. And the CRA kind of sort of furthers that. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I'm assuming that as those things come in, sometimes if there hasn't been a good enough interagency communication, that Congress catches something and says, whoa, 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 these two things are in opposition to each other.
To each other. Yes. Okay.
Y'all need to fix that because
yeah,
you're going to tell people go and stop at the same time, which if you've ever done that to a dog, right? You know, come stay, right? Like they go, and they eventually just lay down because they don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's sensory overload
right,
for your
you're
pet.
Being mean, yeah. Right? Yeah, so you're being yeah. mean. So I can see where that also is an advantage, which is that Congress can catch a thing and say, these two things are not going to work together and you're going to cause my constituents harm.
Yes.
By trying to make them do both of these things at the same time.
Another thing that we've seen, Nian,
because there isn't a requirement for agencies to check regulations with other agencies.
No, but that can arise when they're going through the rulemaking process, right? I mean, because people can provide comments. And
this is in exact opposition to this other rule.
Yeah, right.
Y'all need to get yourselves together.
But one of the positives of the CRA is that because rules have to be reported to Congress, and again, Congress has 60 legislative working days, a rule can be referred to a committee that has, if you will, oversight of that agency and that particular policy area. And it's the kind of thing that they can reference in a future hearing, particularly a future budget hearing.
Mm.
So even if a joint resolution doesn't get passed, the committee in the future can make reference to it and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, per the CRA, you reported this regulation and we're not entirely sure this flows from your authorizing statute. Would you care to explain it? Now, a good agency head will view that as an opportunity.
Right.
Okay. A poor agency head is just like,
we'll panic.
You know, well, or, you know, mutters underneath their breath or to the legal counsel for the agency, I hate these idiots. I don't know. I don't understand why I have to explain it to them. Okay.
And that will be caught on a hot mic and that person will be fired. Yeah. Well, but you bring up an interesting point there, which I would like to explore just a little bit, which is So the CRA is very separate from the budget.
Yes.
Like the joint resolution is not about money.
Nope.
You don't say we resolve that this is a terrible idea because it's going to cost a lot of money.
No.
That's a whole separate.
That's part of the budget. That's part of the budgeting process. The CRA focuses on, if you will, substantive rules, okay, that are potentially going to affect a whole bunch of people's lives, right?
And right, but the congressional joint resolution is not based in money. It's based in
either approval. Approval or disapproval.
Okay.
We did not like this particular regulation. Okay.
They don't have to do anything if they like it though, right? They just sit back and chill and it goes through.
Yes. And again,
so it's an opt out, not an opt in.
Yeah.
They have to opt out of the regulation.
And again, remember, Nia, we're talking about 20 joint resolutions
in 25 years.
5 years.
It's not like it's a common thing that happens.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But you know, poor slob has to read it every day.
Yes.
Yep. Even if it's not being acted on. Now, you also were talking about 20 that were passed.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean 20 that came to the floor.
No. Yeah.
And didn't get passed because probably way more than that came to the floor and people were like, brr, and then nothing happened.
I got to admit, I really loved the audio there.
Sorry.
I was just like, man, because we've talked about this in regards to presidential.
I talk in sound effects. I can't help it.
But it made me think about Nia, our discussion of the lawmaking process, and how in the episodes, this is not
Schoolhouse Rock, we were talking about presidential vetoes, and you went ahead and said wouldn't it be great if when the president vetoed a law, okay, there was like an audio that went with the stamp, right? Okay.
Yeah. You know, I have revised my audio. It should be wah, wah, right? Right, like they do on game shows.
Yeah, or the teacher on the old Peanuts. Yeah, right. Okay. You know, and if you could capture this on C-SPAN, okay,
it would be awesome. Oh my gosh. C-SPAN's already fun to watch sometimes, but that would make it even more fun. I think we are not far from cameras being in the White House, like in the president, like you being able to cam the president occasionally.
Oh, in the Oval Office.
Right, yes. Which I think would be terrifying with some presidents, but I think we're not that far from that. Joe Biden won't do that.
No.
But when we get a younger hipster president.
Yes.
Who's used to having their entire life be an open book.
Yes.
I think we'll see Facebook posts at 4 a.m. Like it'll, I think in some ways Donald Trump has opened that door. But that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
So here's my other like question about
the CRA.
The CRA, which is, so I send you my regulations.
Yes.
And you find one that you don't like.
Yes.
And you go and you get a joint resolution, and you actually get one, which is nothing shy of a miracle at this point, that you can get any number of people to agree on something like that.
Okay.
Joint resolution, if I'm recalling correctly, is both the House and the Senate.
Yes.
Is it a majority of it? It's just a simple majority of each?
Yes. Yeah. It's just a regular bill. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So you get 260 people, roughly. No, 271 people. I don't know if I did the math there right or not, but anyway, right. Okay, simple majority in the House, which is 435, and 100 senators is 535, which would be 250 plus 17, which is 267. Okay. Seven. So you get 267 people who say, all right, we don't like it. It goes to the president. The president actually allows it to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So the agency
then has to rescind the rule, which means, according to the APA, they have to formally announce in the Federal Register that they are rescinding a rule. And then, okay, the agency is prohibited from issuing a substantially similar regulation in the future.
And in the future, meaning forever, not like in the future for 10 years or in the future for 20 years till you get a different Congress, or you don't get to keep coming back.
Back. The CRA is silent about how long, but the interpretation by, of course, members of Congress is forever.
I'm surprised there's not been a lawsuit about that to try to get clarity on.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean? Because perpetuity is a very long time. Like, you don't know whether situations on the ground might change that might cause that regulation to actually be a very good idea.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that there has not been some sort of, because really what Congress did was they made a rule, we are forever going to get to keep you from doing this, except that like a good idea 100 years ago would not seem like a good idea now.
Well, in the other conflict that could arise is, what if Congress disapproves of a rule and the president signs the resolution, approves of the resolution? But what they disapproved is in conflict with the agency's authorizing legislation.
So they say you can't do that. And the agency says, yeah, it's written right here in the rule you gave us before this rule that said we could do it. Oh.
So for administrative law scholars, you know, that's like one of their dream future cases.
Yeah, because right? That would have to go to SCOTUS, right? Because SCOTUS would have to figure out which one takes precedence, the Congress that authorized the agency or the Congress
that says, nope, we disapprove of the rule.
Yep. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh, that's something to look forward to. I hope I'm the first agency head that happens to.
Oh, hey.
There's good things about putting me in charge of the Space Force. I'm just saying we can test out all kinds of stuff with administrative law.
And because we're talking about, something in the federal government, a phenomenon in the federal government, a particular phenomenon might be called I was Rogered.
Except, boy, would that have a connotation that I disapprove of.
You know, it's kind of sort of like, you know, when a nominee for a federal judgeship gets rejected by the Senate, the verb is they got borked.
Yeah, okay. I know. Poor Judge Borg.
I got Rogered.
That's already a thing, but wow.
Me is just like, man, this podcast episode took a decidedly negative
dark turn
at the end.
Can the CRA, can they disapprove of parts of a regulation?
No, it is, you disapprove.
Or is it the whole thing or not at all?
You disapprove of the regulation.
Can I disapprove of jelly but leave peanut butter on my sandwich?
Nope.
Okay, to disapprove of both.
Yes, okay. And again, when the CRA was first passed, a number of administrative law scholars thought that what agencies would do is to issue regulations with a lot of parts and a lot of complexity to make it more difficult for the Congress.
That's clever, because there'll be stuff in there that everybody will want.
Yes.
Oh, right? And then there'll be stuff in there that everybody disagrees with, and what are they going to do? They can't throw out the entire thing, because if they do, then they lose the stuff they want.
Yes.
And that's dashed clever.
That's politics, my friend. That's politics, right?
That really is politics. That would be a great way. Yes. Okay, well, now that's given me a path forward.
Yes. See, that's why when you become, the Secretary of the Space Force.
I need a really good administrative law guy like you to come in so I can say, this is what I want to do, and you can make it happen.
Yeah, and I can come in. Again, listeners, I apologize for yet another West Wing reference. Okay, you would need a Leo,
right?
A Leo McGarity, right?
You need somebody who knows the ins and outs and how to get stuff done, and
yes,
and how to word it just so
that when we do submit the regulation to Congress, they're just like, one, they're not entirely sure what the regulation is about. But
that we definitely need obscure language.
But two,
this sounds like she wants to take over these other agencies, that can't be what she really wants.
But it doesn't say that she is acquiring the other agencies.
Yeah, how is that even a okay. Which is why we have discussed in past episodes, and we will wrap up on the concept that the most dangerous presidents in history have been people who understood that, who understood the concept of how to politic rules and regulations to get what you want. And in part, the way you do that is you make it hard for your opponent to say no.
No.
Right? Yes. I've put things in this regulation. It's like farm bills where, back in the day, Democrats don't really want to support a lot of farm bills because they go to mega farms and they go to Monsanto and stuff like that, which is why Republican presidents or Republican senators put in things like aid to mothers with children, WIC, right? Things like that.
Yes.
Into the farm bill, which they know Democrats want. And so then they're forced to say, if you want this, you also have to give us this. Like, this is how, and that's a brilliant, if you can do that, if you can make yourself as a president give up things in order to get things, you get a lot more stuff than if you're one of those presidents who's like, no, I want it all. Well, then you may end up with nothing.
Yeah, recall, Nia, our discussion about how President Lyndon Baines Johnson was able to go ahead and convince he needed more votes for the Civil Rights Act.
And he got white Southern senators to
vote in favor of it by including sex, because they didn't want to be seen as voting against women.
Right. Right. And that's how you get, it's brilliant. And when a president can't do that, they don't get much done.
Yes.
Because when they come in with their sort of, I am forceful and I will be, you know, and I am the one who will make all the decisions, you're like, turns out not so much.
Yeah. I mean, and
that's not been just President Trump. President Carter had issues with that as well. Yeah. That's been on both sides of the political spectrum. It's been with, you know,
we
heroes
talked about,
and villains all the way across the presidencies.
I mean, we talked about this with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan came into office and he said he was going to balance the federal government budget, and he was going to do it by slashing domestic policy spending. Okay. Well, he also wanted to increase defense spending. And the Democrats in Congress said, okay, fine. If you want more defense spending,
we're going to need more social net spending.
Social net spending. And of course, you know, Reagan's budget people were like, but Mr. President, you're not going to balance the budget. And Reagan was just like, well, okay, something's got to give.
Right. Well, and Bush 41, I will not read my lips,
no new taxes.
And then approximately a year in, somebody said, that's okay, but we don't have any money.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do about that? And he had to eat crow. And
The Democrats went ahead and said, okay, Mr. President, you want to balance the budget? Okay. Well, we will hold the line on entitlement spending, but you're going to have to increase taxes. Okay.
Right.
He made the deal. And he ended up losing the next election.
But he was right to do it because, politically right thing to do.
It was the politically right thing to do and for the country at that time.
Right.
And I know many of our listeners, particularly our younger listeners, are like, there was a period of time where like Americans were concerned about the federal government having a balanced budget.
Yes, there was a time. We've given up on it now, but there was a time.
And in even Bush 41's successor, Bill Clinton, has acknowledged that the surpluses the federal government had the last couple of years he was president
was
because of that budget deal.
Yep.
Okay.
Started with President Bush. And he's taken hits over the years. And people will pull up that clip of him saying, read my lips, which was a mistake. You should never be that emphatic as a presidential candidate. But that was his mistake, not in basically being so emphatic that when he had to walk it back, it made him look weak.
Yeah, because he had no room to go. I mean,
I will do my darndest not to raise taxes. And see, that is more realistic, but doesn't sound good in a speech.
Yes.
And the problem politicians have is they have to make speeches that get people at rallies all riled up.
Yeah.
Read my lips, no new taxes. And people screamed and threw things. They were so happy about that. And it was untenable.
And in that period of our country's history, you had to walk a really fine line about the taxing issue.
Right.
Because if you were a candidate like Walter Mondale, who, when he was running for president in 84, went ahead and said in a debate that he would raise taxes. Okay. Well, now you got a target on you. Okay. Right. From every fiscally conservative voter out there.
Exactly. In your own party and in the other party. Right.
Right. Like, okay.
You've just, but, yeah.
But you can't do what Bush did and said, read my lips, no new taxes. Well, okay, no, what you need to go ahead and say is a little bit more nuanced so you have some room to maneuver.
Right.
Okay. And again, for listeners who like more principled politicians, what Nia and I are describing, okay, could easily be labeled as, well, Nia and Augie seem to be all in favor of, you know, politicians without principles who always cut deals. But again, if you are the president and you want to get things done,
you got to make deals.
You have to make deals, right? If you're a member of Congress.
If you want to do what they say when they say I represent the entire country and not just the party that elected me.
Me.
Then you have to make deals. You have to reach across the aisle. You have to do.
Yes. Okay.
And that's not bad politics. That's not being a bad politician.
And going, Nia, back to your example about the farm bill, right? You know, in addition to including programs that perhaps the other party wants, you may also create or you also put into farm bills subsidies for farm products that are important to members of the opposition party, right? So I will give subsidies for the growing of pistachios, right? Pistachio nuts, right? Well, that's particularly important to certain members of the California delegation.
Right.
Okay.
Which is almost all Democrats. So if you're a Republican, putting that in shows that you're reaching across the aisle and trying to be.
Even if you yourself
hate pistachios and think pistachios should be destroyed from the earth, you are recognizing that
you got to do that, right?
Because those people have to answer to their constituents. And if you come up with something where it kills pistachio farms in California, they have to go home and tell somebody that. You've made an enemy unnecessarily. Why do that? Which is why all bills that come out of the Congress are more than a reasonable amount that you could read in an evening. Yes. They're long. And the reason they're long is because they have all kinds of stuff like that in them.
Yes.
No bill says this bill is super simple. It has one thing, it's written on one page, and we're done. Like, there's not a bill that comes out like that.
Well, Nia, you just brought this up. One of the shortest pieces of legislation that I've ever read from the United States Congress is Title IX to the 1972 amendments to the Civil Rights Act. Now, we work in higher education, right? If you ever work in education in the United States, you're familiar with Title IX.
Right.
It only has 27 words. But even those 27 words have spawned multiple decades, okay, of federal government regulations, federal
anger, discussion,
court cases,
legislation, media attention.
Yeah, right.
Holy cow.
Okay. And that was a piece of legislation with only 27 words. Most legislation is far larger, more complex. And government regulations are that way. And it's not just because the lawyers got their hands on it and they want to, make the government liability immune or proofed, okay?
It's because of nuance.
It's nuance, right?
Right.
Okay.
Want to cover as many people as we can.
Yes, right.
We want to reach across differences in,
geography.
Socioeconomics,
demographic,
education, all of that.
But you also got to put caps on those regulations and programs because you know you only got so much money, right? Okay. So try to thread that needle.
Right.
Okay. That's why regulations are really, really complex, right? And of course, if you want to avoid scrutiny per the CRA, you make them really, really complex.
Exactly. Nobody's going to read that. That's 1,000 pages long.
All right, Nia. Oh, I enjoyed the heck out of this conversation. And by the way,
and consider yourself hired for when I'm the agency head of the Space Force / everything else we eventually get to take over.
Well, I would appreciate that. Okay. I truly would. Because as you well know,
you're going to be my attack dog.
Yes. As you well know, I don't like to be the public face of like anything. And
you're going to be my Machiavelli behind the scenes. And I'll go out and make grand pronouncements and they'll be like, she's so brilliant. And I'm like, nope, it's Augie. Yay. No,
you'll come back to the office and say, so Augie, today I promised X. And I'll be like, you did what?
That is not what I told you to promise.
Anyways, Nia, I really enjoyed this conversation. And listeners, truth be told, today's topic, the Congressional Review Act, was something that I proposed. And I think Nia's initial reaction was, you want to talk about what? So I really appreciate, Nia, you humoring me for the past hour to talk about one of my favorite laws. Of recent vintage, at least, one of my favorite laws. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You've been listening to Civil Discourse, brought to you by VCU Libraries. Opinions expressed are solely the speaker's own and do not reflect the views or opinions of VCU or VCU Libraries. Special thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Music by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at guides.library.vcu.edu/discourse. As always, no documents were harmed in the making of this podcast.